Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Dan, near my home is a billboard that says we spend more time planning our vacation than our retirement. You know a lot about that. And our next guest is a certified financial planner, Ray LaVitri. He is founder and managing partner of Net Worth Advisory Group and also the author of 20 Retirement Decisions You Need to Make Right Now. And it's too late for me, but I totally agree. It's a book covering key financial decisions people must make during that critical yet often underestimated period transitioning from the workforce into retirement. Welcome to the program. Ray, really glad to have you on board. And I'm not even going to talk. I'm going to turn it over to Dan because he, like you, is in the field, and I'm sure we're going to have a great conversation.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Good morning, Ray, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Dan. It's good to be here.
Good. I'm interested in your book, and I'll get it. I think retirement is changing for lots of different reasons. Even with the of today, we are as a nation longer. We have more people over 100 than at any time in our history. I have concerns, though, Ray, that the government in calculating the retirement distributions for qualified retirement plans is not keeping up with the increases of life expectancy. And I know, for example, that the company that I own that just acquired another company which is fighting blood cancer and has had in clinical trials, had tremendous success. I believe we are within a decade or less in curing one of the major killers, whether it's heart disease or cancer or whatever, which is going to have a tremendous impact on longevity and put tremendous pressure on retirement assets that we have acquired. And I'm curious as to what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, I think first of all, I think that would be awesome if that were to occur, and I think that longevity, life expectancy is increasing and will be for the examples you just cited, lots of companies, you know, expanding things like that. You're right, Social Security wasn't built to handle people living as long as they do now, let alone living longer. In fact, I found a study that said that if we take Social Security and make no changes, that by about the year 2038, Social Security would have to cut benefits by about 25%. And so that's with them not making any, you know, with Congress not making any adjustments. So, and that doesn't even take into account the fact that people could be, by then living even longer than they're living now. So there's definitely some pressure on the governmental programs, but then that obviously puts pressure on, our nest eggs as well. As we plan, we should be thinking in terms of what you just said, and that is, and maybe we shouldn't be planning on our average life expectancy as it is stated today, but maybe we should be tacking on an extra 5 or 6 or 7 years and making sure our nest egg is big enough to handle that. And then when we're in retirement, making sure that we're not withdrawing too much too early, assuming that we're going to not be in retirement very long.
The thing that bothers me about the distribution requirements for qualified plans is that if you look at the annual percentage distribution. The government has skewed the schedule to be literally for you to be out of money long before your life expectancy. So we're that are going to be getting rid of all of their money at the same time are going to be out of money, and they still may have 10 or 15 years to live.
Yeah, that speaks, and I guess that just speaks to doing, to having a financial plan and actually working that into your plan, meaning the government's going to require you, based on current law, to take out a certain amount every year from your retirement account through the required minimum distribution that starts at age 70 and a half. And they're going to, and via their schedule, it very likely will mean you're going to have pulled everything out of your IRA before you've passed away. But if you've done some planning, you'll know that, hey, I pulled it out of the IRA. I can't spend it all. I've got to reinvest some of it somewhere so that once I get past that life expectancy table that the government's using for their planning, if I'm still alive, I'll still have money.
Well, you know, I agree with you. I also think that if we look back from the period of time of 2000 to 2008 and 9, the net worth of the American consumer was assaulted three times with an average of a 40% decline in value. The stock market, the dot-com bubble in the year 2000, then we had the real estate collapse. And so we're thinking about retirement. Money to retire on, they're going to have to continue to work. There are other people like Don and myself who are serial entrepreneurs who probably never retire because we always got to do something. So we have two dichotomies of you. People who want to retire who can't afford it, and people who never want to retire like Don and myself. I think the latter, people are more like Don and me, are beginning to realize that there's new opportunities even after you retire.
Yeah, and I think that's a great comment and statement, and that is I would suggest to a client, I would say, hey, you know, if you like what you do, keep doing it. Stay engaged as long as you can if you enjoy it, even if you financially don't have to, because likely for the reasons we've talked about, you're going to live a long time, and at some point you won't be able to do all the things you want. So if you enjoy what you're doing, do it. And if you don't enjoy what you're doing and you have the resources, that's when you jump off and retire and hopefully, you know, find something that will engage you, you know, equally as much as you retire.
Ray, this is Don Mazzella. Ray, you have a new book, but you also have some ideas about the critical period when you transition from the workplace to the to retirement. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, well, there's in my book I outline really the 20 decisions you make in that process, and usually it's a process of a couple of years or maybe months leading up to retirement and months going into retirement, and lots of decisions like when to start taking Social Security, how to position your portfolio, which part of the portfolio to start taking withdrawals from, should you pay off your mortgage. What estate planning, you know, strategies should you be using, and on and on and on. But I would say the first thing that people should do is get a financial plan. So go find a financial planner who's a CFP, been in the business for 10, 20 years, who's fee only, so they don't work on commission, and map out, you know, here's where I am, here's where I want to go, and look at all 20 of those decisions, really. And then make decisions and develop a strategy that's going to get you from point A to point B.
Ray, I'm back on. I don't know if you can hear me better.
Yeah. The first time was choppy, but I can hear you.
I'm sorry about that. I don't know what the technology problem was, so I apologize for that. I was listening to your discussion with Don. I want to go to a strategy that after 43 years in the business, I just heard about about 3 months ago, really relating to picking the right kind of retirement plan.
Okay.
And I lucked out, and I had I have both an IRA and a SEP IRA. And what my tax guy was telling me, since I'm building some new businesses and I'm already past 70 and a half, is that I can't contribute to my IRA, but I can contribute to my SEP IRA income so that I can begin to replace the money that I'm taking out of by putting money in from new business ventures in my SEP IRA. And that's going to allow me as somebody working past 70 and a half to get some tax deduction and reinvigorate my retirement account by putting in more assets, which should hopefully give me an opportunity to let it last longer. You have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, it kind of makes light of kind of how screwy the rules are. In one case, you have an IRA that says you have to take money out. In the other case, you have a SEP IRA that says I'm still an active participant, so not only do I not have to take money out, but I get to put more money in. And the two essentially could offset each other dollar for dollar, really. But hopefully, yeah, the SEP will allow you to put a lot more money in than you probably have to take out of the IRA, which you know is net gain to you. So,
absolutely,
helps you tax wise, helps you retirement wise, build a nest egg. That's a nice. Do you have that option? And some people have that option if they're still at their employer, they have a 401k. They don't have to take money out of that 401k if they're still an active participant. So that's something that's definitely good to know.
Right. So if you look at
Wait a second. You guys are very knowledgeable, and I'm the poor uninitiated, probably like a lot of listeners. But what is a SEP IRA, and how does it differ, and who can take it out?
Go ahead.
A SEP IRA is just a simplified employee pension plan for self-employed companies. So it's kind of like, call it a mini 401k. And it has slightly different provisions, but it allows a company owner to make contributions into a retirement plan, take deductions for those contributions, make contributions for employees, get deductions for those contributions as well. And there are some other plans out there that allow employees also to participate and put their own money in and get deductions for those contributions. So definitely a SEP IRA, something somebody who is a a business owner with their own business, something that they would want to at least look at.
Yeah, but and Ray, I think Don,
I'm sorry?
Don, I was going to say, for people like me and you, one of the other advantages of a SEP IRA versus a regular IRA. Regular IRA has a limit of how much money you can put in, somewhere in the neighborhood of, $14,000, $15,000. SEP IRA allows you, there's a provision that allows SEP IRA participants to put in amount equal to 25% of their gross compensation to a maximum of about $50,000 a year. So if you had a SEP IRA, you could, as a self-employed individual, you could put up to $50,000 each year out of your compensation. So when you think about $15,000 in a regular IRA, you're talking about almost 3.5 times the amount of contribution and tax deductibility that you can put in any 1 year. So the SEP IRA gives the small business people, our listeners, much better flexibility in terms of how much they can put in than a traditional IRA. Ray's correct. It is simply called a simplified employee pension plan. It was designed for small business people who didn't want to have the expense of setting up a defined benefit or defined contribution pension plan. And it's simple. And so it can be done on simple forms and done in a matter of moments. But it has some great tax advantages and contribution benefits.
Super easy to set up, and you can do it at any brokerage firm, any discount brokerage firm.
But Ray, Ray's here because he's especially interested in when people are transitioning from being workers or owners into retirement. And I'd like to concentrate on his strength, which is that, and ask him some of the other things he suggests in doing that.
Yeah, well, I mentioned one, and that was, you know, getting a financial plan. And that should be the very first thing. And I found studies that show that people with plans have twice as much money as people without plans. And I found that to be the case in my own practice. So that would be step one. Step two would be part of that plan would be an investment strategy. And so everybody should have a strategy that maps out how much money they're going to have in stocks or stock funds, bonds, bond funds, and cash. And I find that most people I meet with don't really have any structure. They have kind of a hodgepodge of, you know, stocks and funds and annuities, and they really don't, there's no rhyme or reason why they have what they have. And that should be very structured. Real easy way to look at that is look at your money and say, okay, money I'm going to spend in the next year to two, that's my cash, maybe my CDs. Money I'm going to spend in next year, say 3 through 10, that's my bond money. And money I'm not going to spend for 10 or more years, that's my stock money. And if you put your money in buckets like that, then even if we have a 2008, you're 10 years away from needing stocks that just had a big drop, or 10 years away, or 10 years to allow those positions to rebound and come back and hopefully provide you a good return. So get a plan and have in that plan a very structured investment strategy would be two great first steps.
Dan, we need to stop a moment to hear from one of our sponsors.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
And Dan, I'll go back to you.
So in looking at your 20 retirement decisions that they need to make right now, what do you think is the number one thing? Is it a plan, or is there something else that needs to be done right away?
Yeah, well, the plan will dictate kind of everything else, but part of the plan would be, you know, your estate planning. Part of the plan would be, do I still need life insurance now that I'm retired? Answer is probably no. The plan would say, should I pay my mortgage off or not? When should I take Social Security? How much can I withdraw from my portfolio so that I don't run out of money too soon? Those would all be things that would be, again, kind of part of the plan that need to be addressed, but should be addressed in aggregate because they're, you know, they affect one, you know, they affect each other, so to speak. Probably part of that plan too is making sure that the products that you purchase are the right kinds of products. I'd steer away from any product that some salesman wants to sell you that has surrender charges. And that means that if you pull your money out, there's a penalty. And typically, if there's a surrender charge, there's a big commission up front to the advisor. And usually that comes in the form of annuities or, you know, loaded mutual funds. And so I would say on the product side, once you decide on your strategy, make sure you're buying, you know, no-load products, no-load funds, no-load annuities. And like I said, hopefully at retirement you don't need life insurance because your nest egg is your life insurance at that point.
So looking at buying no-load products, if everybody bought no-load products, would the brokerage industry go out of business?
They would definitely have to transition, for sure. Yeah, I mean, the insurance business would really struggle because just about everything they sell is commission-based. But there is a no-load equivalent to every commission-based product out there. So if you're if you're just a wise consumer and you can say, hey, I could have this mutual fund as a no-load fund, no fees to buy, no fees to sell, low fees inside the fund, or I could have this one over here with a 5% upfront charge and higher expenses in the fund, which would I choose? Well, if it's the very same fund, I'll pick the no-load fund. And that's often the case, that you could find the very same fund in a load version and a no-load version, and the difference will be I bought it at Fidelity or Schwab, or I bought it at Merrill Lynch or Smith Barney.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you haven't talked about, because we probably haven't given you an opportunity to speak about it, but we should, when you're making retirement decisions, there's usually more than one person involved. There's a spouse. Are there any particular challenges that, as the head of a household or the breadwinner, that you need to do in your plan dealing with your spouse?
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, I would say as part of the plan, make sure in most cases there's somebody in the family, one spouse that's extremely interested in the finances and one that doesn't care that much. And they care, but they're not that interested in being involved. But when you do the plan, both need to be involved. And the spouse who's not that interested just needs to know we have a plan, we have a strategy, and if I ever have to pick up the ball and run, I'll be able to, because that, you know, that structure is already in place. And so I don't think both have to become, you know, pros, but the uninterested, you know, spouse needs to become at least aware and know, hey, we're on track, we have a strategy, and I could take over if I had to via the structure.
So one of the things that I look at is, which I think is very important, especially as early as possible, as part of a retirement structure, is one of the biggest drainers and spenders of your retirement dollars is healthcare. And so I always look at people from the first thing I do with them is, can they qualify for long-term care insurance? And if they can, long-term care insurance premiums are a hell of a lot cheaper than spending capital to pay, you know, $100,000 a year for long-term nursing care out of your retirement assets. How do you feel about long-term care insurance?
Yeah, great question. So it's if you buy it when you're 55, 65, you're looking at $3,000 to $5,000 a year in premium in most cases. So, no, it's not tremendous. It won't break the bank for somebody who's been doing some that's prepared. I usually run the analysis and say, hey, let's look at your retirement projections and let's assume that you never have a nursing home expense. Then let's run your analysis and let's assume we have an average nursing home expense. The average nursing home stay is about 2.5 years. And then I run it again and say, what if you had twice the average expense of 5 years? And if that were the case, you would have 5 years of needing to cover expenses for the person in the home and the person who's not in the home. So basically double up on expenses for that period of time. And then the question is, would my nest egg be able to cover both sets of expenses and still be enough for the survivor to their life expectancy? And if the answer is my nest egg is big enough and I'm self-insured, then the answer, then you would just simply be buying long-term care coverage more for either more inheritance for the kids or more emotional, it feels good to have it, as opposed to I need it financially. So I guess I would look at I look at it and present it as an option of saying, hey, you're self-insured. Here's the only reason you'd buy long-term care. Or you're not self-insured. You really need long-term care. Let's get it as early as we can so the rates are as low as they can be.
Yeah, I have clients who could not physically qualify for long-term care, and because they couldn't physically deal with long-term care, it causes you to take a different approach in how you invest the money.
Yeah, absolutely, and how fast they spend the money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the other thing that I'll plug in every once in a while, if I have somebody who's short, we run the analysis, we put in the long-term care expenses, you know, somewhere down the road in retirement, and project out, and it shows if the analysis comes out and says, hey, you're going to run out of money, then we can always step back too and say, well, you know what? What if we were to put the home equity in the equation? Now the home equity is an available asset at the point of going into a nursing home. Could you now cover the nursing home and still have enough money for the person not in the home? And so that might be for people that can't qualify for long-term care. They might look at their home equity as their long-term care policy. Hey, I don't want to use it if I don't have to, but if I have to, it's sitting there and I could get to it if I needed to.
Right.
This is fascinating, fellows. keep on going.
We what
have
we
about,
do? How much time do we have?
We have about five more minutes, and
okay.
I'd like to hear another one of Hit Ray's strategies.
Sure.
Okay. Well, yeah, great. I was just thinking, and I've had this come up just recently, but you know, what to do with, you know, with a mortgage at retirement. So a lot of people are entering retirement. They still have a mortgage, but now they have access to their 401k plan money. And the question is, should I take my, let's say, $100,000 for my 401k and pay off their remaining $100,000 balance on my mortgage? And it's a good question, but it's an easy answer. And the answer would be, in my case, I would suggest not to do that.
I agree.
So and I think it depends on where the money's coming from. So if the person says, hey, I have $100,000, you know, in the bank, and I can get that money, there's no penalties, there's no taxes, it's not making much, and I'm going to use that money to pay off my mortgage. Okay, well, that I can maybe make a case for that, even though I'm going to lose the interest deduction on the mortgage. But to take money out of an IRA or a 401k, that money is going to be added to whatever I take out. It's going to be added to my income, put me in a higher tax bracket. I've got to pay taxes. And to pay all those taxes and lose all the future tax deferral on that money, you know, to pay off a mortgage, lose an itemized deduction, and, you know, and paying off a mortgage that might be only at, say, 4% interest doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, and what I say to people under your illustration, you got $100,000 in the bank earning 15 basis points. Rather than take that money and take it out of the bank and pay off the mortgage and bury that money, because then the only way you can ever get that money back is borrow your own money back. What if you took that $100,000 and took $90,000 of it and invested it in a bond fund or something that's paying a good dividend and used that to offset part of the mortgage payment? So you've taken something that's producing very little income into something that produces income, and at the same time creates a situation where the retirement income necessary to fund the mortgage is somewhat reduced, because the income from the non-earning interest in the bank produces a cash flow to help offset the mortgage expense.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, perfect.
Now, my greatest concern is that we saw what happened to property values in 2008 and 2009. There are still people in this country who are underwater with their mortgages on real estate equity. And to take money and bury it in a house when you have no idea what the outcome is going to be of that transaction is a huge amount of risk with money that could be doing something else for you and making money. I understand my parents grew up with the concept of pay off your mortgage. But in today's reality, I don't think it's a good idea. And I agree with you, the deduction. And it appears that under the new tax law that the mortgage deduction is going to continue to be there. At least we hope so.
Right.
Any other thing?
While you're on that, just ask a question. What do you think about reverse mortgages?
I think that reverse mortgages are what you'd use when you have no other options, is my personal take on reverse mortgages. So it's that scenario of I depleted my investment assets, I'm down to Social Security, maybe if I'm lucky I have a pension, and I have no other assets but my home, and we're not able to make it, so I've got to dip into my home equity via home equity line, or I have no long-term care insurance, we now need help with that expense because one of us is in a nursing home. Now, you know, that would be one way you could tap into that home equity and, you know, cover that expense would be, you know, via the reverse mortgage. So it's not my first line of defense, but home equity is a viable asset. There's no reason that it can't be used if you need it during your retirement.
Let's clarify a point. Home equity can be construed as a product, a home equity loan, or it can be defined as the amount of equity that you have in a house. And so a home equity loan can access that. You have to pay for it. A reverse mortgage, as Don is asking, is another way to to access the equity in your house, but not without any payments of interest. So just make that clarification of when you're using the term home equity, that can mean several different things.
Sure. And in this case, yeah, how can I tap the equity in my house? That's a product that allows me to do so.
Right. It seems to me, though, that I've looked at reverse mortgages, and I agree with your characterization, a last resort. But I think that it can be punitive, and if you think about how they're going to discount the value of the house for determining how much money you can get, people I think are going to be surprised how little money they can get in a reverse mortgage.
Yeah, it's definitely a complicated product, no question, and also why it's the last one I would look at. I mean, and at the point of needing home equity, at that point, maybe you're in your mid-80s, maybe you don't need a big house. Maybe just downsizing will get you the home equity chunk of money you need to help with expenses at that time. So it's not the only way to get equity out of the house.
Right. No, I think that's a great idea. Looking at assisted living or or independent care facilities may be expensive, but not as expensive as having to pay for reverse mortgages and what it means to you. And the real problem is with the reverse mortgage. So you're in a nursing home and you have a problem where it's extended stay, and now all of a sudden you've spent all of the reverse mortgage. Now where do you go? And it's
right.
that's the problem, which I agree with your characterization. It's a last stop. But I think you have to have a plan. And I think it's important to have a plan. Let me ask you one more question.
Wait, Ray. Let me interrupt you. We're talking with a certified financial planner, Ray Levitre. He's the founder and managing partner of Net Worth Advisory Group, and he's the author of 20 retirement decisions you need to make right now. I want to get that in, because someone just ran across my computer and said, "Who are we talking with? He's so good." But Ray,
where can they get your book?
Yeah, so you can get my book at Amazon.com, of course. You can get it at Barnes & Noble stores. You can get it at our website, networthadvice.com. And so a number of places it's easy to get.
Don't gloss over that. Say it slower. Your website?
Okay, our website is networthadvice.com, and you can pick up a book there. We offer them discounted at our site, and, of course, you can get them, you know, at the bookstores.
And you practice on a geographical basis, or do you practice nationally?
Yes, I practice nationally, but I'm located in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I'm a fee-only advisor, so independent, non-commissioned advisor.
Me too. I understand. I've done that for 25 years. It's a great way
to
do this.
Then you get to ask the last question.
So can people from different parts of the country reach out to you, and can you work with them?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I have clients I wouldn't say most, not every state, but lots of states outside of Utah, of course.
Okay.
So probably 20, 25 states.
Okay, super. So if you're interested in finding out what your plan, or if you don't have a plan, then go to his website and give it to us one more time.
Networthadvice.com.
And we'll put his link to his website on our website, recalculating.biz, this evening. And that's my last question, Don.
Ray, thank you. Ray Levitre, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome.
Illuminated.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit costs. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
You know, Dan, our next guest is Colorado business innovator Maggie Schlarb. She is here to talk about how her epic cycling journey transformed her entrepreneurship and how she's helping others. Welcome to the program. We're so happy to have you with us. Maggie, tell us a little bit about your background, your website, and your cycling journey before I turn it over to Dan.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me here. Yeah, my background is I grew up in Canada. I've been an adventurer most of my life. And then once I had kids, my kiddo's son and I decided that, you know what, life doesn't stop when you have kids. The adventure can continue on. And so from there, we kind of researched where we could go, where it would be safe to pull a little kiddo behind us while we cycle toured. And our adventure began, which was the really like shape shifted, as we'll be talking about, how adventure and the cycle tour has really shaped the way I run business and how I inspire and motivate people to create a life on their terms.
Dan, up to you now.
Okay, thank you. Good morning and welcome to the show.
Morning. Thank you for having me here.
You're welcome. So I'm fascinated. Do you consider yourself off the grid?
It depends on what terms you mean. Off the grid. What do you mean?
Well, there are a lot of people who say when they go off the grid, that means to them that they generate their own electricity. They don't use necessarily computers. They heat their house with firewood, and they live out in the woods, and they don't drive their cars a lot, and they live off the land, and so they're not actively participating in the overall society.
No, then I would not consider myself off the grid. I definitely live with my computer.
So if you've done all this cycling, is it part-time?
Yeah, so this cycling was more of an adventure trip, and I'm working on actually planning another one with my kiddo who's now 6. He was 2 at the time we took it. When we did do the cycle tour in New Zealand, I mean, we did use electricity and all that. And we also were blogging as well at the time to share our story and stay connected with family, because they were definitely concerned about us pulling our 2-year-old behind us on a bike, where if you've ever been to New Zealand, there is barely a shoulder on most of the roads. So we were definitely on the roads and in kind of the element of people driving.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what do you do to earn money?
What do I do to earn money? Oh, so I have my own business. I am an access consciousness facilitator. I'm a joy of business facilitator, where the joy of business, the adventure of business and living comes in. And so I offer various classes to do with business, to do with bodies, to do with money, are kind of my main avenues of how I work with people. And then alongside classes, I actually do a lot of one-on-one programs where I'd like get together with someone one-on-one for an extended period of time, and we just kind of we look at their life of like, okay, how is your life right now, and how would you like it to actually be if you could have your life as anything you'd like it to be? What adventures would you be going on? What kind of people would you be hanging out with? How would you be treating your body? And we kind of pull everything apart and then create something that, that lights them up and gets them jumping out of bed in the morning.
So what part of your time would you be spending now on cycling?
On cycling? So
yeah.
I'm not spending a ton of time cycling right now because I'm not on a tour right now.
Okay.
I spend every day I'm moving my body, but the cycle tour, like the adventure of cycling, like the story behind the New Zealand, the 5 months in New Zealand, is what actually shaped how I live my life. And it's actually interesting. I'm jonesing for more of it, but more so have been doing hiking the trails around here where I live in Durango, Colorado, and, going to the desert with other entrepreneur mamas and our boys and taking them on adventures of hiking and looking at ruins while I'm planning the next bigger long-term cycle tour.
So when you're how long do these tours typically take?
Well, the one, it depends on what we choose. The one that we did in New Zealand was, a total on the bike was 4 months. We spent 5 months in New Zealand and cycled about 2,000 kilometers. That's 1,240 miles. We didn't cycle every day, but most days we were on the bike from 2 hours, and our longest day was 8 hours, which was quite a big day for us.
When you take a tour like you just talked about, are you taking time off to meet with clients or prospects to talk about what you can do for them, or are you totally engulfed in just the tour?
I was engulfed in the tour. I think the next tour, it'll be different. It'll be a tour where it'll be planned a little bit differently. This tour that we're talking about that has happened was more blogging and having the experience and really being there. And the next tour will be more, and it's still in the creation phase of it, will be more cycling, doing some business, offering a class, and then hopping on the bikes again and going. It'll be quite an adventure to include all of that.
Yeah. So the way in the past, your downtime is where you make your money in order to be able to pay for your 5-month-long tours.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And
Dan,
then being on the bike. Go ahead.
No, you first. Thank you're the guest.
Oh, thank you. I was just going to say, being on the bike, it's really like when we're out on the bike and touring, it's like all we need is food and shelter. Right, and some water. And so we live, it's pretty frugal, and that might have changed, you know, going to some fun, fancy restaurants will be in the future tours, but really we would camp, and we had everything we required on us at that time. So in our bags, there was just all the clothes we needed. There was one outfit that would be something that we would go out to something fancy, and everything else was with us. It's a very frugal way to travel.
Don?
You know, Dan, I happen to think outside of America, New Zealand is the finest country in the world. But I have a couple of questions, Maggie. The first one is, did you do this just you and your son, or did you have a companion?
I had a companion. So I call him my husband. He was my husband at the time. So we went as a family, yeah.
Well, you know, that sounds like a fun and a half. But let me ask you, you've taken off these months travel. You've kind of centered your life, and you're now trying to, if I hear you correctly, help others center and focus their life. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Are you going to write a book about it?
I believe so, yes. There is a book brewing.
Well, what are the two or three things that you learned from this experience that you could pass on to our listeners?
So a couple of the things I learned. One of the main things that like just allows everything I feel like to thrive in most people's lives is to be curious. The curiosity of, you know, when we were cycle touring, we had a book that kind of showed us whether the elevation was, you know, how many hills we were climbing that day, how far we had to go. Yet there was this element of curiosity of what's around the next corner and who are we going to meet? Because there's so many people that we got to meet along the way because there is a lot of tourism in New Zealand. And so that piece of curiosity, no matter what shows up, like with a flat tire, we did get a flat tire at one point and it was about to rain, pour rain, and just being curious and kind of being in the question of, okay, well, what is possible here? What is the gift in this? And we ended up getting invited to this famous person in New Zealand's home to stay the night because she lived just down the road and she saw that we were in trouble. Whereas if we went into the kind of form and structure of, oh, it's terrible we have a flat tire, and not be curious about what other possibilities are available to us, we probably would have been, stuck in the rain. But being curious, you know, what's next? Okay, where's the joy in this? Where's the joy in a flat tire, right? Because oftentimes we'll get a flat tire, you know, and whatever that may be out in your life, we'll start to go into the woe is me. But if you get curious, okay, well, what else? What else? Things can show up far greater. So same thing, every corner we took, every little, you know, dip in the road or adventure along the way, getting curious is my number one way. I am always inviting people to get curious about what's really going on and what is really possible. And the other, like, another thing is really to increase your awareness of, like, what is going on around you. And so how I did that, I used to play a game with myself while I was on the bike because some of the roads were long and there weren't a lot of cars, but I also had to have, I had my kiddo pulling him behind me. So I had this heightened awareness of, I have to keep my kid safe. And so I would play this game of guessing without looking, trying to guess by the sound, like the rumble or the intensity of the sound of the car, of what vehicles were coming next. Like if it was a logging truck, if it was a motorcycle, it was that. So I developed this awareness of listening, right, hearing what was coming and being able to guess what was there. So in business and life, it's like having that heightened awareness of being prepared for what's coming. That's another piece of really being prepared, tuning into your, you know, the sight, the sound, the smell, everything that you can be aware of so that you're ready to shift and move when required. So when I heard the logging trucks, I definitely moved over even more so, even if that meant I had to kind of pull off the road to keep my kiddo safe. And the other, like, if you want, the third piece to look at is the self-empowerment piece. Because when we started our adventures in New Zealand, I wasn't confident. I was concerned. I was like, what the heck am I doing in a different country, pulling my kid behind me and not feeling like the strength at which I'd wanted to on the bike in the beginning. And it was kind of scary, right? And so I just developed like that self-empowerment piece of knowing that each pedal got me then a little bit further, a little bit further, and knowing that coming back to, I chose this. I want to be here, and I want to complete this whole, we circumnavigated the South Island. So, you know, one foot in front of the other, one wheel spin after the other to keep going and have the confidence and have the tools to self-empower oneself to keep going in the direction of their dream, so to say. So there's three for you. I could keep going, but there's three for you.
Good. Thank you. If you think about your adventures, when you're going to a country as beautiful as New Zealand, mm-hmm. It's easy to get. I spent some time in the inner part of Australia and in the Blue Forest and along the Coral Sea. And it's just beautiful country. And sometimes it's easy to get lost intellectually, stimulating, and that the area around you is so overwhelming you're not necessarily seeing at all. But I wonder if there's a book in your future, if on your next cycling tour, it might be interesting to take with you a small recorder, and when you're on the bike, just turn it on and record whatever it is you say or see to yourself or to your child. And so when you, at the end of the day, you play back and listen to what you had to say, you may discover things that you didn't realize that were there because of the limitations of our memory. But the audio sound of your description triggers a memory, so that at some point in time in the future, you want to write a book, you've got that audio memory.
Absolutely. I think you nailed it, because the amount of things I wrote in my head when I was cycling this last adventure was phenomenal. So I think you've nailed it. I will be bringing a recorder with me next time.
Yeah, I mean, you also pick up the sounds of the environment that you're in. Mm-hmm. Were you a cyclist before you had a child?
No, I was not. I was a runner.
You were a runner.
Yeah.
And what was it, the child that caused you to switch from running to cycling? Or were you a cyclist before you had a child?
Well, no, I mean, I did like to go biking when I was a kiddo, but nothing like extensive, like a tour. Running, my body just kind of, it just wasn't feeling so great anymore running. And so after having a kiddo, it was more hiking and having him on my body while hiking. So running with a kid on your body is not fun. And for me, running with a stroller was not fun. So it turned into hiking. And then as he got old enough, we used the Chariot. So having the Chariot to pull behind allowed us to go further distances. So it just allowed for more mobility, the cycling, with having a kiddo. And so now with the next tour, this is part of what I'm navigating, is he'll be biking part of it, whether he likes it or not.
I, as I said before the show, I live on Sanibel Island, Florida, and we have those little cabooses. But most of the time, it's older people taking their dogs around as opposed to grandchildren. Occasionally you'll see that, but mostly dogs. So,
yeah.
What is the greatest discovery? What's the one thing that you've learned about yourself and life as a result of these journeys?
One of the things I learned about myself that has changed, like it was a kind of eye-opening, was that I tended to be done before something was done. So like even with a project, and this has changed, thank goodness, but even with a project or whatnot, I would be done before it's done, because I'm like, okay, I'm done. And so same, I noticed this on the cycle tour when we were out there, that about 2 weeks before we were done, I was like, I'm just done. I didn't want to bike anymore. I didn't want to keep on the adventure. I just wanted to be done. And so in that, you know, there wasn't really a choice. You know, we were on our bikes and we needed to get back to Christchurch. And we weren't willing to, we weren't willing to hop on a bus and take the bus the rest of the way. So one of those things was just to keep going and not, like, to not be done before I'm done, if that makes sense. You know, the kind of like, I'm over it.
You've been
right?
talking to my wife. She says about me all the time.
Maybe you should go.
I'm done before I'm done.
Yeah. And I'm not sure, like, I wonder if that was, it is partly because I don't want it to be over, but then I want it to be over so I have the control, right? And that's the other piece, is the letting go of the control, because you can't control when you have a flat tire. You can't control only got sick, I think, once, but you can't control that. So the other piece is to really let go and really be in the flow, because when you're in the flow of things, that's where the magic happens.
Do you find, as you travel, do people look at you strangely, or are they welcoming? What are the people's reaction to you and your towing your child in a caboose?
Most people were pretty excited, really impressed that here we were out for months, right? Whether we're at the beginning of our journey or near the end, they're like either looking at, wow, you're out here for months, or wow, you've been out here for months. And there is an awe and an inspiration for people to be like, oh, you actually can travel with a kid. Oh, you actually can still be adventurous when you have kids. And that it is possible that, no, we're not retired, right? We just prepared and planned so that we could be out on a tour. So the way people look at us, some people, you know, you're pulling your kid behind you on these street roads. But in general, it was more like the awe and inspiration and being impressed and just wanting to know more about who we were and why we're doing what we're doing.
As you progress on this adventure, not only the one in New Zealand, but in general, your life adventure, and as mm-hmm. you work with people in your other business, I'm curious as to what you see or hear about what people, not think about what you're doing, but think about what you say. Are they optimistic, pessimistic, non-believers? What is their reaction when you meet with them and you start talking about what it is you want to talk about with them? Are they receptive?
Yeah. In general, they are receptive, because I have a way of, like, if people have, like, a narrow focus of something's not working or something's going on in their business or life that doesn't seem like it's been labeled bad, I have a way of flipping it on its head. So what I see a lot when people are in front of me, or if I'm using the Zoom conference, or even, like, there's a hearing that I can hear even when I'm on the phone, like, you pick up those energies through the phone, is this, like, eye-opening. They are receptive. They're like, oh, I've never looked at it that way. So they are totally receptive of, like, oh, okay. And then that opens the door for more, for me to say even more of my wild things.
So if you look at your life where you are today, and you look 5 years, 10 years down the road, do you know what you're going to be doing?
I know that I will still be building a business. I know that my business will be far bigger. I know that I'll still be doing this work of access consciousness, and that bringing people into possibility and bringing people into curiosity. How exactly that will look, I'm not sure. If I had my way, I would actually be taking entrepreneurs on cycle tours and allowing them to have the experience while conversing about business and being on the adventure.
And my last question, because we're just about out of time. When your son is too big for the carrier, will he ride with you on his own bike on these adventures?
Yes. Absolutely.
They may not go as far, because he may not be as strong because he's still growing, but biking adventures is still going to be an important part of your life.
Absolutely, yes.
Good. Well, we're out of time. Mm-hmm. Thank you for spending your time and sharing your life with us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me. I'm very grateful.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.